Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 this is Lean Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode, number 137. Lee, how we doing tonight, bro?
Yo, what's good, bro, man? I'm hanging in there, man, just watching the NFL draft, man. Just hanging, bro, you know, getting ready for this this big opening of the city next week, but I'll be home.
Oh, yeah, wait a second, so, Is Colorado opening back up or Denver's opening back up?
Yeah, they Denver's opening back up April 27th, I think it's April 27th. They've been talking about it. April 27th, they're supposed to start opening up some stuff slowly, and then the following weekend they're supposed to start opening up some other stuff. So they're going to do it in phases, but starting on the 27th, some businesses will start opening back up.
Oh, yeah, that's on Monday.
Yep.
Today's the 24th. That started Monday. So, that's – and how do you feel about that? I know you said last time that you're going to sit it out for the first couple weeks.
Man, I'm happy for the small business owners to – you know, to probably start getting their business back on track. We're not worried about the big business as much because, you know, people going to go to the mall. People going to go to restaurants and bars and stuff like that. It's more the small businesses that I'm really looking forward to getting themselves reestablished and back on their feet.
Yeah, that's a really nice thing to see that. I know a lot of businesses are struggling right now, in a lot of states. Well, yeah, quite a few states lately. I saw in the news a lot of protesting to open back up because a lot of people need to pay their bills, and a lot of people too. No, not even just businesses, but just regular employees who work for those businesses can't get unemployment, and throughout this whole time haven't really had any income because it's easier said than done with the unemployment right now. There's, you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people that are applying for unemployment. So it's kind of, the system's a little jammed up, so it's not only the businesses but the employees that work for the businesses too. You know, it's a struggle all around right now. It's whether you know somebody who's, you know, sick with the virus, or you know, your friend knows somebody who's sick with the virus, or you haven't been really affected by it health wise, or nobody around you has, but you've been affected by it financially, and that's a big struggle too. So I can definitely see that. A lot of people have, kind of their own issues to deal with, you know, regarding everything right now.
Yeah, man, this pandemic has definitely shook things up, man, as far as people's health, you know, the economy, you know, unemployment, the stay-at-home thing right now, homeschooling. There's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be different, man, when we get to the other side of this, man. Like I was telling one of my coworkers, I was like, I think depending on how this online schooling goes, schools may give kids the options of, do you want to take classes from home or do you want to come to school? Me personally, I'd rather my kid go to school because that way you build up relationships, build up your social life, stuff like that. You still got to high school sports and teams and stuff. But, you know, some kids may be, you know, introverts or, you know, maybe tired of being bullied, and homeschooling is for them. So it's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be different on the other side of this, man. It's definitely going to be a different world. Like I said, I think last week, I think people will interact differently. You know, I know, like, for me, like today, my homeboy came over, he worked for Federal Express, and he was like, yo, I was in the neighborhood, you know, and I was like, you know, my first instinct was to go give him a, you know, shake his hand, give him the brother hug, you know, but then, you know, we both looked at each other, we gave each other the elbow tap, and, you know, man, it was just like weird stuff like that will become the norm. So, you know, just got to roll with the punches, man. One thing about our country, and, you know, when we are faced with adversity, you know, we get through it, and we normally come off bigger and better on the other side. So we'll see what happens.
Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you, bro.
You can hear me? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, a similar case. Like, you know, when my nephew comes over the other day, you know, I've been giving him the elbow. So a lot of times I'll say, you know, I might give him a high five because he's 4 years old. So I might give him a high five. But I've been giving him an elbow, but I kind of make a joke out of it. I try to laugh and make it seem not weird. So because he doesn't understand any of this anyway. So I try to make it like a fun thing for him. And he gets excited when I put my elbow out, he gets really excited. He thinks it's the coolest thing. So I'll try to make that a more understandable, into something more fun. But we'll see what happens. Cause I know, at least in my situation, I live in Massachusetts. I really don't think, I'm pretty sure we're number 3 in the country for most cases and most deaths right now. We were like number 9 like 3 or 4 weeks ago. I just know that because I've been kind of following the numbers a little bit. That's kind of just like the journalist side of me that has to, you know, always take a look at the statistics too and just see what the case is. But we've definitely seen the jump over here, and especially over in like the heart of Boston, and I live, you know, pretty much in the heart of Boston. So Boston has pretty crazy here now. I mean, the city that's actually right next door to the city I live in is actually has a higher infection rate than the city of Boston does as a whole right now, which is actually it's kind of mind blowing if you think about it. The entire city of Boston, including all those different you know, all those different like boroughs within Boston, all making up that huge, area, you know, and then this one city, which is actually next door to where I live, about 5 minutes down the road, is like a higher infection rate than the entire city of Boston. So it's pretty bad over here. I don't know what'll happen. I know it's through the 30th right now for I think it's like the first week of May in Massachusetts right now for the stay at home order. But, you know, I figure we'll be going like through the end of next week with the stay at home order. And then after that, I don't really know. I wouldn't doubt it that Massachusetts will probably be looking at, you know, another month of what pretty much what we're doing right now. So.
Yeah, man. You know, like we encourage our listeners, man, you know, stay at home, take care of yourself. You know, be safe. You know, we all come out on the other side, but we all got to do our part. And I already know, man, it's going to be crazy when people can finally get out, man. And like I told you, man, I'm gonna let people do their thing for probably about 2 weeks. And then I'll slowly start getting out a little bit, you know, probably go to a bar, have a beer or something. But outside of that, you know, man, I'm going to avoid large crowds. Yeah, man, I'm just going to take it slow motion, bro.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go with that. Keep a low profile even once people do. I'm sure they'll be in a rush to get out to, you know, a lot of their favorite spots. So a lot of their favorite stores and things like that. People will be encouraged to shop. And I'm sure a lot of stores will be putting out a lot of big deals and trying to, you know, save people money to encourage them to come shop because the store has been closed down for a while. You know, at least the ones that have been closed down for this whole period would probably try to, you know, lure customers into the store so they can do more business. And, Yeah, I think that's a smart way to go about it. I can't, you know, I think one thing that I just wanna say, and this will probably be my last thing on this topic, is I just want, you know, every state is going about things in its own way, and where you live is, it could very well be in a very different situation than where I live. We're one of the biggest states, you know, we're up there with New York and New Jersey with kind of the situation right now. So everyone's kind of in a different situation, depending on where you live. I would just say do your own research, though, because I think a lot of the fear that has been present all along, and this is going to be kind of hard for some of you to hear. And you might take it personal at first, but this is true. Do your own research, because a lot of the fear that's been present this whole time, along with the severity of the virus, the fear comes from not knowing. Like, we always fear, like, as Americans, we tend to fear what we don't know. And that happens in many different ways. Like, when you know, culturally, you know, just different interests that people have, when people are different than us, like as humans and as Americans too, I see that a lot, is when people have different, or just behave differently than us, when we don't understand it, we tend to stay away from it. It's almost like being afraid of it. And we tend to, you know, once we understand something more, we tend to not be as afraid, because you understand somebody's tendencies, you know why they do what they do, so you can kind of see it in a different perspective. And I'm relating that to the fear of not knowing about the virus. Is if you're not doing your own research, well, I think what a lot of people tend to do is just watch the whatever news sources that they tend to watch, like even before all this happened. So whatever channel you watch, I think people tend to just watch the major news organizations, and that's where they get most of their information from. And I think that causes a lot more fear than what is actually needed. If people would do their own research, I don't think we would be in the spot that we're in right now, where a lot of people are even that much more stressed out than they probably would be if you just go out and seek some of your own information. You can get around a lot of the creation of fear that is the fear mongering that is occurring on, you know, within a lot of the major news organizations. And I think that could really help a lot of people. So just because a lot of these things, a lot of the accusations that are being made and a lot of the opinions that are coming out is causing people a lot more stress. And I think if you just break it down and do your research and understand a lot of the factors, instead of like listening to what a lot of these news anchors are trying to scare you about, it would change your perspective a lot. And you could take a lot of the weight off your shoulders, because things are not, the reason why I don't watch the news as much as say my mom does. And I don't know everything. I'm still learning, but I know enough to know that the news, it's all about agenda setting. And that's what a lot of these major news, that's what they do. And when something, you know, they create emotions in people. That even politicians do it. They create emotion in people. They know what to say. They know how to say it. And if they want to, you know, lead the masses, they know they can, because they have that audience of people who doesn't do their own research. And they know all they watch to find out their information is NBC or, you know, ABC News or Channel 5 News, whatever it is. They know that they're all that the masses listen to, because a lot of people won't go the extra mile and try to find out the facts. So take that as you will. And if it offended you, then it is what it is. Then you probably got work to do. If it offended you, you got work to do. And you got to help yourself. And that's just what it is.
Yeah, man. So, you know, but look, man. So I guess this May 9th card is really going down, man. So I guess you're excited about it. Huh?
Yeah. So that was, you know, that, you know, the thing about it that I'm really, that I'm not sure. Well, not that I'm not sure, but the thing that kind of has me thinking a little bit differently this time around is ESPN is actually tweeting about the event, and they're, you know, I haven't seen it on TV. I'm not really an avid ESPN watcher, so I really wouldn't know if the actual TV station is advertising UFC 249. But I know I've seen, I do follow ESPN's Twitter account, and I tend to see their tweets. I know they have tweeted about it, so that's something that I don't remember seeing the last time around. I don't remember ESPN, you know, kind of like doing their part to confirm the event last time. You didn't really hear anything. I don't know if you ever saw anything the last time from ESPN, but I feel like this time there's a lot more posters, there's a lot more promotion going on from them as a network, and I feel like that kind of puts a different kind of stamp on it.
That's because they weren't behind it. They weren't behind the idea of having fights. So that's why ESPN stayed quiet about it, because they weren't on board. Now ESPN is on board with this May 9th fight because everybody is slowly but surely coming around to getting back or trying to get back to the norm. And Mark Raimondi, he just tweeted out that whole 249 card is going to be on ESPN. Like I thought it should be, because that way you can get more eyes on it. So, you know, with ESPN actually tweeting about it, that's actually a big step in the right direction that the event is probably going to happen, because remember, they didn't tweet in support of UFC Brazil. They didn't tweet in support of UFC London. They didn't tweet in support of UFC Fight Island. But now all of a sudden they tweeting about the May 9th card. So actually I think that's a step in a positive direction. So you know, when you get the biggest sports network behind you and they actually doing marketing and promoting for you, then that's a good thing for the UFC.
And, you know, I think, too, that this time it's more early on, too. Like, I feel like there's a lot more notice. You're seeing promotion, you know, a fair amount of time. You know, a fair amount of time ahead of the card, as where before it was kind of like they kind of popped up last minute, like, oh hey, there's a UFC card next weekend, and it was literally like a 1 week notice thing saying that there was a card and that they were, you know, they announced the main event, and you're like, oh wow, like Tony Ferguson's fighting the main event next weekend. Like it just seemed very, the window that they. But kind of like the window that they announced it in, the window of time they gave them, so I feel like it was very small, and it almost just seemed as if it was rushed. I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but this one just seems like we're a couple weeks out from the event, two and a half weeks away from the event. I feel like it's ESPN's getting behind it, and I think it's gonna happen this time. You know, I'm getting more and more confident. I think it's gonna happen.
And actually, you know, I think with a lot of cities opening back up, this might be a good way for some restaurants and bars to actually make some money, because it's going to be on free TV. You know, they can show the fight. They don't have to be on the pay-per-view network. So a lot of sports bars can actually have a great come-up on May 9th, depending on, you know, whether or not they're going to have the social distancing, whether or not they're going to have the numbers restrictions, you know. So it's definitely happening at a good time. Maybe Dana White has some insight on this happening, and that's why he went with May 9th. Or maybe it was just lucky timing for him. But let's have some live sports, man. I'm all for that.
Yeah, and from what I read from, I think it was I think it was Bokumoto earlier today had tweeted that he tweeted a quote from Dana White saying that I guess they're setting up an octagon out on the beach on this fight island that we're theorizing about right now. This fight island that's a mere myth in the MMA community right now. So they're gonna set up an octagon on the beach. There's gonna be no fans in attendance. And with this, the fighters are just going to throw down. And I'm wondering how certain things are going to play out. One thing that I thought to myself when I was taking a drive the other day is I thought to myself, how are they going to do when they have the face-offs? How are you going to have the fighters face off? I mean, they're very, very close to each other in the face-offs. I know we're talking about social distancing here. I mean, they're close in the octagon as well, but the face-off, they're a lot of times literally like inches from each other's face, and I feel like that might be a health hazard with considering everything.
I think what's going to happen is everybody probably going to be tested beforehand, and they're probably going to still do the ceremonial face-offs. They'll probably be a little bit further apart. Depending on the fighters, you know, I think it's gonna be up to the fighters, man. Do the fighters want to do the tradition, the old school face off, or would they just, you know, stand 6 feet apart, you know, flex, you know, and all that good stuff? So, I think if everybody is tested and everybody is good to go, I don't have a problem with the traditional face offs as long as we take all the measures to make sure everybody is good to go and healthy.
Wow. So, wow, what a couple of weeks does. You know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about this. You were very set on the UFC not holding an event, and now it seems you very much flipped to the other side of that, or the other side of the fence, and now you are ready to see some fights. And I would say you're anticipating the event.
Well, you know, my main thing has always been the safety of the fighters and the crew and everybody involved. And I just really never got a warm fuzzy that the UFC was all about making sure that everybody was on the up and up. I just felt like they were acting out of desperation and just wanted to have an event. But I think with ESPN being on board and with the realization of everything that's going on in the world, I think Dana White has come around to giving this coronavirus the respect that it deserves. And as long as they're doing that, then I'm all for it. But my main point has always been the health and safety, and that hasn't changed.
Now, I have a different question. This is kind of steering off course a little bit. Do you think that, so we know it's Khabib Ferguson that's the cursed fight. Ferguson's other fights seem to usually go to plan. I mean, pretty much all his fights that I can think of, you know, besides, all his recent fights I can think of have pretty much gone to plan. He doesn't really miss weight. He's usually pretty on point with his weight. And, you know, he only has like a freak injury like every once in a while. And it's usually when he's matched up with Khabib and not his other opponents, which is kind of weird how that is. I don't really think people have questioned that enough. Like why? I know we joke and we say it's a cursed fight, but if you ever really think about it, it's like, why does it, like something always happen? It's just kind of, it's a little suspicious. I'm not saying that there's fake injuries, but it is kind of suspicious that it's just that fight that has always fallen through. Every time Ferguson fights somebody else, nothing ever goes wrong, and he always fights, and there's no craziness, you know, the week during fight week that makes anything fall through or anybody can't fight or any replacement, nothing like that. And usually a similar case with Khabib's other opponents too. I mean, I never was a fan of Khabib. I never watched him until I think the first fight I ever watched Khabib was him versus Michael Johnson.
pretty sure that was the first fight I ever watched him. And before that, I really...
It was probably his first fight ever on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Before that, he really wasn't on my radar. Once I saw the Michael Johnson fight, he was probably a bit more on my radar. But even then, his style had never really drew me in, never really been a fan. But it does seem like all of Khabib's other fights besides the Ferguson fights always go to plan as well. So I don't really understand how that is. But with all that being the case, do you think Dana White is taking any measures to make sure that Ferguson and Gaethje happens, or if it doesn't happen, that a fight happens for the interim lightweight title?
Well, I think that the card is so stacked that if the Ferguson-Gaethje fight doesn't happen, it hurts the card, but it doesn't hurt the card because you still get Dominic Cruz and Henry Cejudo, and then they just announced that the Rozenstruik and Ngannou fight is for the interim heavyweight belt. So you still get two title fights, and they also announced that the Cerrone-Pettis fight will be the prelim headliner. So you still got quality fights on the card. So if the Gaethje Ferguson fight doesn't happen, you know, you just slide the Cejudo Dominic Cruz fight to the main event. I think that was the reason why he made the card so stacked, because Nunez already pulled out. That's one fight gone. So if you got a stacked card like this, then if one of your top guys falls out, then you still got two fights that you can move into the main event and the co-main event spot. Me personally, I think Gaethje is at a disadvantage in this fight because he's really hasn't been training. He's going to have a short camp, whereas Tony has been training due to him supposed to be fighting Khabib. So when I look at this fight, Gaethje has to come out balls to the wall in the first two rounds, because I see him fading, starting probably the end of the second, going into the third. And if he can't get him out of there in the first two rounds, I see him getting submitted probably in the fourth or the fifth round due to him not being in camp and due to him not being training.
And so, just to backtrack a little bit, did you say that they announced that Rozenstruik and Francis is for the interim heavyweight belt?
Yes, I did.
Is that official? Because I know Rozenstruik was calling for it to be for the interim belt, like probably about a month or so ago, but it was just kind of like he called for it, but there was never really any. I never thought there was any type of response from the UFC about. But did they actually? Does it say that on the card? Did anyone say that was?
I want to say Brett Okamoto announced that earlier this week that fight would be for the interim heavyweight championship. I think it was on Twitter either Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm trying to find it now, but I did see where they said that would be for the interim heavyweight championship, because they don't know what's going on with Stipe's eye, and as far as him still being on the front line as far as being a firefighter and this coronavirus thing, which he said has taken priority. So, you know, it is what – actually, I'm looking at the poster right now for UFC 49. It just says Ngannou versus Rozenstruik heavyweight bout. But I know Brett Okamoto came out and said that this will be for the interim heavyweight championship. But they got interim lightweight championship on the Ferguson Gaethje fight, but they don't have anything on the Ngannou Rozenstruik. So maybe Okamoto was being a little premature on that, or maybe they just haven't updated the post.
Yeah, because I hadn't seen anything about it. I'm not saying that it's not out there. I just probably hadn't, I probably missed it, but that'd be exciting if it was, though, because we haven't seen, from, I mean, my recent memory, we haven't seen an interim heavyweight belt in, man, I want to say at least, like, I mean, at least there's been no interim heavyweight belt in the last, like, 5-6 years of the UFC. I know that. Beyond that, I really don't remember when's the last time there was an interim heavyweight belt, but I know as recently as, like, 2014, there's been no interim heavyweight. So that'd be pretty exciting if they do write that up in the contract and get an interim heavyweight, because it's not cool to have. I mean, as much as we might want to see Stipe fight, you know, Curtis Blaydes, or who I believe is makes a very strong case to be the number one contender right now. But that's aside from the point. As much as we want to see Stipe fight or see, you know, the DC trilogy with him, we don't really. I mean, me personally, I don't want to see champions sit out and just kind of sit on the belt. I mean, and I know on this show we have – actually, I don't know on this show when's the last time we've really talked about it, but I want to say we've gone back and forth on Twitter criticizing DC's his past, you know, title reigns where he kind of sat on the belt for long periods of time. For example, when he had the light heavyweight belt, there was a stretch of time where he did not defend his light heavyweight belt, I want to say, for about a year and a half. And that, to me, was total bogus. As a champion, to sit out for that long is just – it's kind of lazy. I mean, if you're a champion, you should really be fighting more often than that. And that's just kind of sad as a fan to – especially if you're a fan of somebody who's just sitting on the belt. And that's why I don't want to see – if he's got, you know, health issues and he's, you know, off with at his other job, then he should just vacate the belt and let the guys like Ngannou fight for a vacant title instead of fighting for an interim belt. That's what I think should happen. But maybe the UFC doesn't want to pull the trigger just yet on Stipe, and maybe they're waiting. You know, I wouldn't doubt that Dana White is hoping that Stipe can get back. You know, maybe sometime during the summer before August is out and try to get the trilogy with DC, because it'll probably sell really well. But you know, as far as me, I wouldn't mind seeing the belt get vacated if Stipe doesn't think he's gonna fight this summer.
I'm looking at this now, and no, this card is not gonna be. It's not going to be advertised on ESPN. It's actually pay-per-view. I'm on the ESPN site right now, and the prelims will be on ESPN and ESPN Plus, but the main card will be on pay-per-view. And the UFC have definitely pissed me off, because Greg Hardy is on the pay-per-view card. I don't understand why they insist on putting him on pay-per-view. He's not that good. He is a former football player who can MMA. His record don't even dictate for him to be on the main card. If I was making the main card, being that we already know Cerrone and Pettis is going to be the prelim headliner, I would have probably put Nico Price and Vicente Luque as the starter of the pay-per-view card. And I probably would have had Greg Hardy on the prelim card probably right before the Uriah Hall Jacare fight. I just don't understand why they are giving this guy such a major push every time he fights. It just makes no sense to me. He is a novice. He is basically somebody that's learning the sport of MMA. Why must he be on the main card of every show that he's on? I just don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't like it. And I wish somebody could answer that question for me.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused, too, because I'm not sure if, you know, I know, like, one of my good friends who actually, he's called into the show a couple of times. He actually called in last week, too. But he's a fan of Greg Hardy. He gets pretty excited when he knows he's going to be fighting. I just wonder how many fans does Greg Hardy, like, I don't know if he really had, like, he may have a big fan base, but he may not. I really don't know. I mean, I never really, I know there are people out there who look forward to his fights, but I can't tell on what scale is he really like a draw, because that, you know, because otherwise, you know, aside from that, I don't know. Like you said, his record doesn't really, it's not really a record of a guy who really deserves to be on a main card either. I mean, he lost his last fight, and he's got a main card shot, so it's kind of strange in that regard. I didn't actually see his last fight, but from what I know, it wasn't close. You know, he pretty much got dominated by Volkov, and so it is kind of weird when you consider he has a very mediocre record for a guy starting out professional. He doesn't really have an impressive skill set. I mean, we question if he really has power. I mean, he seems to be able to finish fights, but you really haven't seen. I mean, I really haven't seen any like highlight reel knockouts from Greg Hardy, and you know, in the big leagues, like I really haven't seen a fight where I said, wow, that guy has power. Like I really haven't had any reactions like that with any of his wins. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I can't really justify that, but I did have a feeling that they would move him up once we heard that the Nunes fight wasn't going to be on the card anymore. I had a really good feeling they would just move Hardy up to the main card. I think I actually said on the show, and then it happened.
He was on the main card anyway. They moved the Jeremy Stevens Cater fight to the main card.
Well, that's even better actually, because my guy Cater is from Massachusetts. He's from on my way, so I'm actually I'm stoked for that one. And to be honest, I think he's gonna run right through Jeremy Stevens. I don't even think that's gonna be a competitive fight. I really don't. You're probably gonna say that I'm biased because he's the home team, but I really just don't think. I feel like that's kind of a mismatch to even put those two guys together. Jeremy Stevens, I have always enjoyed watching him, but I feel like I've always been pretty honest about where he was at skill wise, and I just don't think he can do anything with Calvin Kattar. I feel like Calvin's a lot more fresh. He's young. He's definitely taken a lot less punches. I feel like he has more crisp boxing. And I just think Cater's more hungry right now. I feel like he hasn't had like the sort of up and down career that Jeremy Stevens has had, where he might get a big win and take, you know, two or three losses. He hasn't had that kind of career. Calvin Kattar has been pretty much a beast and has been really impressive as of late. I think he's gonna run right through Jeremy Stevens. It's probably gonna be, I mean, if it's a 3-round fight, I would say if it goes to the cards, Kattar's gonna win by unanimous decision, probably 30-27 across the board, and if not 30-27 across the board, if not 30-26, and then if it doesn't go to the scorecard, I would think Kattar is going to win by either first or second round knockout, probably second round.
I think Kattar finishes him. I think Jeremy Stevens' best days are behind him. I think he's a guy that's had a good career, but I think these new age fighters are just so good now that they are leaving the older guys behind. As much as I admire Jeremy Stevens, he's been in some big time fights. He's never basically been able to get over the hump. I think Calvin Kattar is prime right now. I think he's one of those guys that's up and coming and will just get better. It's just time, man. We'll see a lot more of the old guard start to fade away with the new guard coming up. And that's just the way it is, man. It's just like in the Serengeti, man. When the old line gets old, it's this new young roaring line that's ready to take over, and then he vanquishes the king, and the king is never seen again, and that happens in the UFC. You know, it's the UFC is a brutally honest sport if you really look at it. Once you start getting older and your skills start to erode, fighters will exploit you in the most violent way on the biggest stage in the octagon. Some guys know when to stop. Some guys don't. And I think Jeremy Stephens, his better days are behind him, and his downward trend will continue to happen once he fights Calvin Kattar. And I think Kattar KOs him probably late in the first round or early in the second round. And I think we'll just start seeing Jeremy Stephens become a guy that just sticks around the UFC, fights here and there, and then maybe, you know, unceremoniously retires on Instagram or Twitter. So, but yeah, I think Kattar dominates him, and I'm glad this fight was moved to the main card. I think it deserved to be on the main card from the get go, just like I think the Nico Price and Luque Vicente fight deserved to be on the main card.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy to me that they don't have Nico Price on the main card. That's a banger of a fight. I think that one could be fight of the night, even with the fights that we have on the main card. I feel like that could definitely steal fight of the night, because Nico Price really, those are two guys that really put everything in there when they go to the cage, and they really, Nico Price really puts on for the fans. And if you remember Luque's last fight, which I'm pretty sure was the Steven Thompson fight, you know that fight was unbelievable. So that is, that's pretty shocking to me. I'm actually looking at UFC.com right now, and they have the Ferguson Gaethje headliner, like the poster on when you first go on UFC.com on the main page for the events. When you scroll down, it actually has a May 9th card. And then they have another card, which I don't know if this is a typo or what, but apparently there's another fight card on Wednesday, May 13th at 8 p.m. I don't know what that is. But then there's another one, which is the Saturday after, which I think this one's actually legit. I think this one is, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be main evented by Dan Hooker and Dustin Poirier. And that's actually the reason why, when I asked you earlier if you thought that Dana White would have a plan in case one of these guys in the main event drops out for some crazy reason, that they would try to save the main event. And that was the reason why I asked it, because knowing that Poirier is scheduled to fight the weekend after this fight, so I wouldn't doubt that he would be able to make weight a week earlier if he were to step in to fight either Ferguson or rematch Gaethje.
Well, Keys, looking on Twitter, that May 13th fight, that one that's going to happen on a Wednesday night, that is actually supposed to be true with Anthony Smith fighting Glover Teixeira, and with Walt Harris, my boy, coming back to fight Alistair Overeem. That's supposed to happen on the 13th of May. The UFC is supposed to be trying to have three events in 1 week, which would definitely be unprecedented. I'm quite sure it'll be welcomed by the fans. The UFC is trying to do it, bro. I mean, I don't know about the overkill with having a Wednesday night card, a Saturday card, a Wednesday card, and another Saturday card. That seems a bit much, but hey, I understand. You're trying to get your product out there. You're trying to be the only show in town. And basically, if they pull it off, they will be the only show in town. So we'll see what happens, man. But what you said about Poirier and Hooker, you know, it might be some a tad bit of truth to that, you know, both Hooker and Poirier will definitely be in training probably could make weight if something happens to Ferguson or Gaethje. But I just think the fans really want to see Ferguson fight, man. I think Ferguson is the guy everybody wants to see fight right now. Even though it ain't who we want him to fight, I think he's the guy that everybody wants to see fight. I mean, of course, you know, the Conor fans, they out there, you know, of course they want to see Conor fight. But I think right now everybody wants to see Ferguson fight for the belt, for a belt that he never lost, for a belt that was taken from him because he got injured doing media stuff for the UFC. And the UFC has basically, in my opinion, and I don't like to curse on this show, basically the UFC shitted on Ferguson to me. And I think he deserves this shot. I think he deserves the spotlight. I think he deserves to be the guy that the whole world be looking at the end of the night for this UFC main event on May 9th.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried, honestly. Now that you say that and now that I really think about it, like the way Ferguson might come out in this fight, I'm not worried that he would get caught because of it. I'm worried about what he might do to Justin Gaethje. Like he probably so, like, especially watching the way he's responded in a lot of his like media pressers and things like that, and like the little spotlights they do, let the media ask a lot of questions. He's definitely still very, well, he seems to be very agitated by having being stripped of his interim belt, which at this point was like 2-3 years ago. What seems like probably about 2-3 years ago, but he seems to be still agitated. That still has a bad taste in his mouth over the fact that that happened. And that actually kind of makes me a little bit worried for Gaethje, because I feel like he might not be safe in this fight, where he's coming in on short notice, like you said, versus a guy who's at a full camp and a guy who, you know, realistically is the interim lightweight champion already and is trying to reclaim his belt, and probably has a bad taste in his mouth a little bit still because of the fact he was stripped. So really putting those variables together, I feel like, yeah, I'm kind of scared for Justin Gaethje in this fight, to be honest.
Well, actually, you can look at it the other way, too. Maybe Tony comes in overhyped, too emotional, and that causes him to lose. You know, that has happened in fights in the past where somebody comes in too emotional and they get handled. But I just think Gaethje, I think Ferguson, I think he's had this pent-up aggression because he felt like he was done wrong, and I feel like he was done wrong. And I think this is going to be the time where he's going to come out and he's going to put his imprint on the fight. And he's going to talk so much trash about Khabib at the end of the fight. And I think Khabib is going to hear it, and he's going to get emotional, and he's going to try to fight Ferguson. If Ferguson wins, probably in about 2 months, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, well, at that rate, you probably see Khabib coming back in sometime in August, if that's doable with his schedule. You probably see fight happen in August.
Well, Ramadan started today. So he's going through Ramadan right now. So Ramadan normally lasts, 30 days, I think? So we're in April, so that'll go to the end of May. So you say 6 weeks of training, that's June, mid-July. So maybe we get Ferguson versus Khabib to end the summer.
Yeah, I think we'd be super lucky to see that. You know, I don't get excited when it comes to that fight now, because I never thought it would fall through this time, and it did. You know, even though it was for a very different reason than it has in the past, I'm not going to get excited until I, you know, either hear a call out or, you know, Ferguson on the mic post fight or see, you know, about agreement, the fight gets signed and see the fight poster, and then actually won't believe it until they're in the octagon.
I would be surprised because it's May 9th, so I was about to say I wouldn't be surprised if Khabib was to be Cade's side for the fight, but that's not going to happen, Ben. It's Ramadan, so. But, you know, I think the loser of the Gaethje Ferguson fight probably fights Conor next. So I think that'll be a fight that we get next. The loser, either Gaethje or Ferguson fights Conor. So in which way it go, the loser would definitely bounce back and probably be in the biggest money fight of their career, while the winner is fighting Khabib to be the lightweight champion. So in which way it go, I think it's a win-win for both guys that are in the fight. So, and normally there's never a win-win for the loser, but I think it'll be a win-win for the loser of this fight. What do you think?
I think if, you know, the loser of this fight were to go and fight McGregor, that'd be a really, you know, a really big pat on the back to lose the fight. I feel like that would be a very big gift to somebody who just lost the fight. So I don't know, but
Do you think the loser fights McGregor next, or do you think the loser is out of the McGregor fight sweepstakes?
I think the loser could fight McGregor next. I also see the side of it that says like it wouldn't make sense as far as losing and then getting like a big fight after losing. But that does happen. Sometimes it happens. I mean, guys fight for a belt off a loss. You know, that we've seen that happen, and it's happening now. I mean, Aldo was actually about to just fight for the belt, and he's coming off a loss. Dominic Cruz Dominic Cruz coming off a loss, but you don't even really – I don't even think of him as coming off a loss because it was so long ago that I feel like he's just coming out of retirement. I don't even think about his wins and losses because it's been so long since he's had either one.
But either way,
I guess it wouldn't be the craziest thing. It wouldn't be the craziest thing we've seen here lately if Gaethje were to lose and then get a McGregor fight or if vice versa.
Yeah, man. I think that coming off a loss is coming off a loss, but coming off a loss and fighting for a belt is different than coming off a loss and fighting in a big fight. Fighting Conor is not a championship fight, but it is a big money fight, and it's probably two guys that the fans would want to see him fight, whether it's Gaethje or whether it's Ferguson. I think people would be more into it if Ferguson was to fight Conor, because that would be more of an action-packed fight. But I think a lot of people Gaethje has a puncher's chance, but I just don't think he would do everything necessary to win in a Conor fight. I think he wouldn't take Conor down. I don't think he would do that. I think Tony would. I think Gaethje would try to stand and bang with Conor. Well, I think Tony would try to engage with Conor until he feels his power, and then he'll go to let me do what's going to take the win. So, you know, normally you don't reward losers, but I think in this case, the loser is going to be rewarded with a big fight.
Yeah, I mean, either way, I wouldn't be mad at it because any of those fights, any of those fights, I feel like is And those are all good scraps to me. So, I mean, in terms of wins and losses, I do tend to get you know, logic-based. But, you know, at times, too, it's I really wouldn't mind seeing any of those fights. So that's okay with me. If it's like a little tournament bracket that we have going here in the lightweight division, then that's great. If Gaethje were to win, but then Khabib wasn't able to fight, and Gaethje ends up fighting McGregor instead, in the meantime, then that's cool. I feel like there's a lot of different situations that could happen. I'm fine with any of them. I think Poirier is going to be in the picture again pretty soon. I think he's going to dominate Dan Hooker. I think that's another mismatch. I think that's really another mismatch on the table right now. I don't think it's as much of a mismatch as Jeremy Stephens and Calvin Kattar, but I do think it's a mismatch. I think Poirier is going to dominate him. I don't even see a way that Dan Hooker wins. I mean, his striking, I just feel like it is nowhere near. Like, you know, and I just think Poirier, his boxing is way better. And I haven't seen really much else of what Dan Hooker brings to the table that tells me he's going to find another way to beat Poirier besides the stand and bang and try to outdo him at what he's best at.
But
so I think Poirier will be in the picture again after he wins that one.
But my only problem with Poirier is that he got dominated by Khabib, though, man. It was like he had one moment where he had the submission on, but outside of that, it was like it was total domination. And if Khabib continues to be the champion, do I really want to see Poirier fight Khabib again? That would be a no. There's two fights that I definitely don't want to see again. And I definitely don't want to see Conor versus Khabib again because I think it'll be the same outcome with the same style. I just don't think Conor has the ground game or the takedown defense to slow down Khabib, and I think it'll be the same. I don't want to see Poirier versus Khabib because Poirier didn't show me. He knew going into the fight what he needed to work on, and he couldn't stop it, and he didn't have a plan B. His plan B, I guess you could say that submission attempt was his plan B, and that didn't work. And right after the submission didn't work, he ended up getting choked out. So I don't maybe Ferguson versus Poirier, if Ferguson was to win the belt, I would love to see that fight, but if it's Poirier versus Khabib, no, I'm not. I'm out on that one, bro. I'm sorry.
Now, what would you think about we were supposed to get Ferguson versus Max Holloway. Now think about this. Do you think Max – now this will probably have to spill over into our next show because we're about to run out of time, but what if Max Holloway would have moved up to 155? If Ferguson were to lose and Holloway moves up to 155 and we get Ferguson versus Max Holloway, you like that one?
You know what, Keys? I normally don't buy pay-per-views, but I would buy that one because I think that would be – if that fight was to happen, that would be the fight of the year. I don't care if that fight happened in January. It'll be the fight of the year. Man, I think Max and Tony will put on such a show that the fans will want more. I think win or lose, because if they do what they do, that fight will be insane.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be unbelievable. I think it'd be unbelievable. You know, we'll definitely talk about that a little bit more because there's more pieces to that you know, with the 145 featherweight division. So we'll talk about that a bit more on our next show. We're all out of time for tonight.
But I definitely got through a lot of content.
Hey, go ahead, before we leave,
I got to get your opinion on this because somebody put this on Twitter this week, and I know how big of a fan you are of Max Holloway. Somebody put on Twitter this week that Max Holloway has no chance of beating Volkanovski. Max should not fight him again and just go ahead and move up. Do you agree with that, or do you think that person was just a prisoner of the moment of the last fight?
Yeah, I think they're just kind of stuck in the wave of the performance that Volkanovski put on. He looked really good. You know, he definitely and I love Holloway, but I think Holloway got dominated in that fight, and I'm able to say that even as like a really big fan of his, I can say he lost badly. I don't even think he was close to. I know I heard people, you know, kind of surprised at the judges' scorecards when it came out. I really wasn't surprised because I don't even think I gave Max a round in that fight. Like when I was going round for round, I'm pretty sure I gave every round.
I think I gave him one round. I think I gave Max one round in that fight. I think it was round three or round two.
Exactly, but I know I do think this the adjustments Max could make to beat Volkanovski. I don't think Volkanovski is like this unstoppable fighter. You know, I feel like he could be beaten, and I think Max can beat him. I don't think he has to move up to continue. I think he can win the belt back and then move up. I'd rather see him do something like that. But then, you know, if he did beat Volkanovski, you know what people are going to say. They're going to say they want a trilogy fight, and then it's like, oh, man, like, do we have to see a trilogy with every time guys fight two times? It always has to be a trilogy. But you know that would probably happen. So anyways, that's a story for another time. We have
actually,
to go through a lot.
I don't think you get a trilogy fight if Max finishes him. Because there's a difference between winning on the judges' scorecard and you getting knocked out. Because if you get finished, that's domination to me. I mean, Volkanovski dominated on the judges' scorecard, but if Max puts him on his back and put him to sleep, I don't think that will warrant a trilogy fight. I think that will warrant Volkanovski having to fight somebody else to possibly get back in the title picture. But that's just my personal opinion. And like you said, we have covered a lot of stuff tonight. Like always, we went over time. But it's always fun to do Friday night fighting. But, you know, like it's like
Friday night
like
fire,
we always
so
say, these Friday night fire shows, man, we love these shows, man. And, me and my man Keys, man, through it all, you know, we still here, we're still giving you content, we're still bringing you good talk, you know, coronavirus, UFC talk. And it's always fun to be up here doing this show for the people. It's great, man. This is one of my getaways from the world. And, you know, I love doing this show. I love being able to talk sports. And it's always good to chop it up with my boy Keys, man.
Yeah, definitely. Like I always say, I appreciate everybody who listens. Last week we kind of had a jump in listeners for last week's episode, so we'll probably try to, you know, in the off days in between our next show, try to look at that and see what we maybe could do, you know, similarly to that one, that maybe to kind of see what you guys might have liked and trying to get an idea. But now that's like I said, thank you for supporting us, and as always, it's a good time chopping it up and giving you guys this content. We're going to try to keep on going throughout, you know, the changing situations and everything that's going on. And hopefully we can, you know, be back. I mean, we'll be back next week, but, you know, hopefully in 2 weeks we're over here talking about, you know, giving our predictions for Fight Island. Hopefully that card doesn't fall through. So I'll be looking forward to that. Everybody stay positive and have a good night, Lee. The floor is yours if you have any last words. Otherwise, I'm good. We're over and out.
Yeah, man, like always, man, everybody take care of yourself. Stay home. You know, take care of your family. practice social distancing, and you know, I haven't said it in a while, but you know, I think it's time for me to say it. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them, and have one good laugh, man. You never know what a laugh will do to you, man. I'm gonna go off on a small tangent real quick, Keys. I need you to bear with me. Thursday, yesterday at work, I had a rough day, man. I was cruising along on my new job. They had me doing a project. I was cruising along, and man, I made a mistake. I tried to go back and fix the mistake, messed that up. So then I tried to move on to the next transaction, thinking, okay, I'll fix it in the end. I messed that up. So man, I was just in my head, man. I was like, damn. So then I was just like, fuck it. So I called the guy over that's training me. I was like, I need to delete this out and start over. He was like, you sure you want to do that? I was like, yeah. So we deleted out the system. So I was like, well, I'm going to come back to it. So I go to the next one. Man, I'm like five transactions into it, and I'm just messing up again, man. So the guy, he's an older guy. He says, hey, Lee, my pharmacy called me and asked me do I need my prescriptions updated. And I was like, they called you? He was like, yeah. He was like, yeah. I told him that my Viagra was running low and my wife was complaining. And my doctor said, do you want me to increase the milligrams? He was like, no, I really want you to take this prescription away. So I just started laughing, man, because it was so funny, man. It was funny at the time because I needed that. And, you know, man, it got me back on track, and I end up, you know, getting everything input in the system. And, you know, that was it was a well-needed laugh, and it helped me get through what I was going through mentally in my head. So with that being said, everybody have a good weekend. Have a good night. Lee and Keys signing off one more time for you. See you next week. Peace.